You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Add a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Thanks for tuning in tonight. It's Michelle Jordan. Hope you've enjoyed this really beautiful, beautiful weekend. Went to the farmer's market in Santa Rosa yesterday, of course. And, oh, it was just glorious. Spring harvest is here. And soon we're going to have other farmer's markets opening up, and we'll be talking about those. But for now, we're talking about something that's kind of secret. And one of the things I find so enchanting about what our guests have done is that they use secret doors. And, you know, if you've read anything when you were a kid, like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or any of those things that have those little hidden compartments that open into something magical, this will appeal to you. Of course, if you live through Prohibition, it might as well. Once you get over the initial scare that what? Prohibition is back. And it is. And it is a place. And it is in Healdsburg. And on that note, I'd like to welcome our guests, Richard and Kay Rosenberg. Hi.
Hi.
And congratulations.
Thank you very much for having us.
You've been proprietors of the Grape Leaf Inn for more than a decade now. How long?
It's been about 11 years.
11 years, okay. Mm-hmm. And we met when I came up. I heard about the little speakeasy that you have. It was really behind a bookcase, right?
Mm-hmm. It was and is, yeah.
And it still is. Mm-hmm. I guess that was, 3 or 4 years ago?
About that, yeah.
And that was primarily for guests? And did locals get to come in?
It was primarily for guests.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess you had the afternoon cocktail hour or something there.
Exactly, yeah. What we do is we open up the secret entrance, mm-hmm. and it leads to our wine cellar in the basement of the inn. And they spend an hour of enjoying different wines from the area.
Mm-hmm. And you have that. I loved the way you had your cellar behind those wrought iron, that locked gate, mm-hmm. and all those fabulous Russian River Pinot Noirs tucked in there. Well, now you've opened something that everyone can enjoy.
We have. We opened, actually, Wednesday was a soft opening mm-hmm. of Prohibition, which is located on the corner of Healdsburg Avenue and North Street. A block off the square in Healdsburg, and we designed it as a speakeasy. The design was Kay's idea, and what she came up with, which seems to be working quite well, is as a retail operation in the front of the speakeasy itself. And you don't see the speakeasy when you walk in, but you mm-hmm. do see Kay's retail area, and she carries wine accessories and different unusual items that are wine-related for the most part. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a warehouse wall behind it, and it looks like that's the end of the store, but it's not. Because in the corner, there's a old-time phone booth. And if people are curious enough, they can go into the phone booth, pick up the phone, and suddenly the back wall of the phone booth opens up to the speakeasy.
What was your inspiration for this, Kay?
Well, as you said before, with the speakeasy, that we have at the inn, we wanted to do something that was same but yet different. Mm-hmm. And we found an old telephone booth down in Texas, and we had it shipped up and refinished. And it just seemed to fit, and it mm-hmm. kind of fit the era, that kind of Prohibition era, and that kind of there's an industrial feel and design that's coming about. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing just seemed to fit together. And both of us love old gangster movies.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of took our inspiration from these old gangster movies. And in fact, we have a big screen TV inside the wine bar. And it plays a loop of old like Cagney and Humphrey uh-huh. Bogart movies.
Oh, it sounds like fun. Do you by any chance know Volpe's?
I know of it.
Have you been there?
No, I have not.
It's changed quite a bit in recent years, and by recent I mean probably 10 or 15. But I think it billed itself as the oldest continuously running bar in Sonoma County, and there's a plaque on the outside of the building. It's in Petaluma, Washington, at Kentucky, I believe, and there's a plaque. It was the first place to open after Prohibition, but in the front it has these wonderful old wooden stores, and it was a market, an Italian market, very much like Traverso's for a long time. But in the 90s, they pretty much got rid of most of that and turned it more into a restaurant, an old family style Italian restaurant. Well, even while it was a market, those in the know could go, and there was a doorbell, and the whole market in front there would be dark. But if you knew, you would ring this doorbell, and all of a sudden, a door you could barely see opens up, and you hear accordion music.
I love it.
And somebody will come and open the front door for you, and you go in the back, and it's all the old timers from Petaluma, all the old ranchers.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow.
The first few times I went, I felt completely, I mean, they all knew each other. It was a totally legal bar, but they had kept what it was during Prohibition.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't been down in a few years. I need to go and check it out and see if it's still like that. And sometime when you're coming through Petaluma, you should check. You'd love it.
Absolutely.
Oh, we will.
I think people love that sense of mystery and what's behind the closed door,
sure.
or the telephone booth or whatever. It just
absolutely. Kind of, it's magical. Uh-huh. It takes you back to all those things you could believe in when you were a little kid.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's nothing like forbidding pleasure to make it just a little bit better.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Delayed gratification, the threat that something's going to, you know, vanish uh-huh. any minute. It just heightens our pleasure. That's how, I think that's how we're wired. So it's a wine bar. And I know you have wine, rare wines. You also have some ales and that sort of thing. Talk a little bit about that part.
We were fortunate because there's a brewery in the city in San Francisco, called the Speakeasy Brewery, and we carry a Speakeasy beer, which is a lager, and we carry Big Al, which is a wheat beer. We carry Big Al, as Kay said, and then we also carry, of all names, Prohibition, which is the exact mm-hmm. same name of the bar that we've put into Healdsburg.
I find it a little surprising that they were able to get that name approved. It's great.
Yeah, it's a wonderful. In fact, I tried to get the name Prohibition as part of our website, and it had already been taken, but not by the bar, by somebody in the Midwest.
Huh.
So, but we have Speakeasy Wine Club, so that's our website.
Speakeasy Wine Club.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wine bar, but then it's also a wine club. And does the wine club function like, you know, winery wine clubs?
It's different in several respects because we've. We essentially have leveraged, for the lack of a better word, the what we offer at the Grape Leaf Inn, which is our bed and breakfast, and we have 12 rooms there. With the club, which offers not the same kinds of wines that every winery would necessarily offer in their clubs, but different wines from smaller boutique wines, mm-hmm. wineries that don't have access as the larger wineries do.
Mm-hmm.
So we mix up the selection every time we ship. We ship either two bottles every 2 months, six every 6 months, or a case a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we can ship now throughout the country.
So, you can?
Yeah. You know, just about every state has – you have to, of course, comply with their laws and mm-hmm. pay their revenue taxes, which is part of the territory. You can't avoid that. And we don't – don't have a problem with that because people do come to the area to look for the hard-to-find wines. And we found mm-hmm. that there's a demand and an audience for that. So what we do is we also offer a discount on anybody that joins the club for staying at the inn as well as with the wines themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's something that other wine clubs can't necessarily sure. offer. So we have that ability because we own the inn as well as mm-hmm. as the wine club. And people are interested in it. It's a unique concept, we think, and it's different because, as I said, we change the selections frequently, and it's a surprise every time it comes. So, again, another little mystery package mm-hmm. arrives at the members' doors, and they mm-hmm. seem to enjoy that.
Now, how do you choose what wines? What do you base it on?
Well, I have part of my job is certainly to go out and taste the wines, mm-hmm. and that's a more difficult part of my job. I have to go out and make.
I know. Oh gosh, I have to try more wine.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to do it. I've selected myself to do that.
Yeah, I bet you don't get to complain to your friends, do you?
No, not very often.
I know my friends get cranky with me. And say, oh God, I have to go home and review this wine.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh, poor you.
Yeah, exactly. So the club is a. It's a fun thing too, and as is the bar.
Mm-hmm.
As Kay said, we have a continuous loop running on the big screen TV of old gangster movies from mm-hmm. the 20s and 30s, and we play 20s and 30s music mm-hmm. as well.
I bet it'd be a great place to go on Halloween.
Yes, yes, I would think the costumes would be there.
I'm already thinking of mine.
Yeah, okay, well, we look forward to it. Yeah.
How many people does the bar hold?
About 40.
About 40, okay.
Yeah. We have four tables, and the rest of it is a long bar that runs the entire length of the building itself, so it's pretty large.
Mm-hmm. And do you serve beer and wine? Do you have any food?
No food, snacks.
Snacks, okay.
But no prepared foods.
Uh-huh.
Our thinking is and was there's so many good restaurants
sure.
in Hillsburg.
Sure.
We don't want to
oh,
compete.
Yeah.
They're all friends, and we'd rather have folks come there for a glass of wine or a wine cocktail before mm-hmm. dinner and perhaps afterwards. And mm-hmm. We think that's adequate.
What are the hours?
The hours are from 11 o'clock in the morning uh-huh. and till 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, okay.
So they're,
big
we're
span
not a
there.
Yeah, there is a big span. Uh-huh. And a lot of the activity during the day, early hours, is focused on the retail side.
Uh-huh.
And then the bar picks up in the afternoon uh-huh. and into the evening.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that retail side in just a minute. First, how about a little music?
I heard tell of the miracles my blessed Savior done. He took a great big ball of fire and poured some blazing sun. But out of all of those miracles divine, before my favorite one was turned.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan, my guest, Richard and Kay Rosenberg of the Greenleaf Inn and Prohibition, the Speakeasy Wine Club. It just all sounds like, the more you say, the more fun it sounds. And I know I said we were going to talk about retail. But before we do that, I want to hear about your grandpa.
Well, my grandfather was actually the original inspiration for what we're doing now. Because he actually had a speakeasy back in New Jersey during the Prohibition years. The front of it was a laundry. And it was an actual operating laundry. And if people wanted to, let's say, clean their insides a little bit, they would go through one of the doors in the place, and in the back was a speakeasy bar. And he had that for a long time. Actually, during the entire duration, he had the bar in mind when Prohibition became law.
That was in 1918,
when it became effective, and he then just expanded his laundry and built the bar in the back, and it continued right to the end of Prohibition, which I believe was about 1933.
Yeah, I think it was 33. Yeah. April 18th?
April 18th, yeah. and Prohibition was repealed.
Uh-huh.
So
amazing,
yeah.
It lasted. That's a really long time to have lasted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I did a little research, and it seems that the government realized that they were losing so much money in tax revenues because of the law, mm-hmm. that it was just had the opposite effect of what was intended, and that was, you know, to keep people, you know, dry and sober, and but the revenues were just going down the drain and going to the mob,
right,
in those days.
And people were still drinking,
and
possibly more.
Yeah, and they were, and my grandfather did well.
Now, did he keep operating the bar after?
He did. He did. He operated the bar until he then opened a wine and liquor store in the same area and ran that for a long time. And then one of his sons, my uncle, was a representative for several beer companies. And my father, who was a lawyer, represented the liquor industry in New Jersey. Uh-huh. So you might say it was in our blood and yeah. for
now,
all those years.
Did your grandfather ever get in trouble with the law?
He never did.
Remarkable.
Well, he had a large payroll, a quiet payroll, and that was
okay.
Yeah, if you know what I mean.
Yes. That is a great story.
It's true.
That's really a fabulous story.
Yeah,
wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the retail, Kay.
Okay. Well, I've tried to find little hard-to-find accessories and wine-related accessories, uh-huh. and retail items that you don't see around. I had to do a lot of research, you know, mm-hmm. go shopping,
yes.
buy things,
uh-huh.
spend money. No, and so I've found some resources, not just from around here locally. I uh-huh. found some wonderful local resources.
Oh, who are some of the countries?
One in particular is Wine Country Woolens, and she actually raises the sheep and the llamas,
uh-huh.
spins it into a thread, then has three looms, and she looms it into wonderful throws. And it's all local right there in uh-huh. Healdsburg.
Oh, nice,
uh-huh.
nice.
And then I found some resources in Belgium and also in France that mm-hmm. had made some unusual accessories and mm-hmm. glasses and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of funny. I have some glasses that are Eiffel Tower glasses. And so the base is metal and looks like the Eiffel Tower with the wine glass on top.
Oh, mm-hmm. what fun.
Real fun things.
Yeah. What sort of square footage, or how big is the retail section?
The retail section's about a third of the entire section, which is how many square feet?
2,000 square feet.
Oh, okay. So it's bigger than I was.
It's large.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, bigger than I walked by. Mm-hmm. Several times, mm-hmm. Tried to find you.
we were in the speakeasy.
my editor wanted me to do a story for the upcoming issue of Saber Magazine.
Oh,
but I couldn't find you, and I looked just like, it's not going to be done in time to be photographed. It would have blown my deadline.
Right, sure, I understand.
Oh yeah. So I had my eye on you, and I was so thrilled when I got all this information from your very fine publicist, Trish. Thank you very much. So tell me a bit. You have a manager. The manager's name is
Harvest Nieto.
It is Harvest.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Nieto.
So that's
okay.
her real name.
Wow.
She's a native Healdsburg person.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, our staff is, I think everybody is from Healdsburg.
Uh-huh.
One person is from Sebastopol, but everybody from Northern Sonoma.
Uh-huh. Now, with the first few opening days, have you been spending a lot of time there?
I have, but not by necessity. Everybody is very enthusiastic about their jobs, and,
uh-huh.
and it's moving very, very nicely. So
mm-hmm.
they... It's nice to be there, but it's also nice to be away and know that it's being run properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so far so good.
And how's it been hanging out there? What do you tell us? What is like, sort of put us there?
It's interesting. People, of course, love the entrance to the speakeasy. They
yes.
love her area, but when they find the entrance to the speakeasy through the phone booth, and you lift up the phone, and then you look up and you see a green light and push the door to open up the wall, it blows their minds. People are just enthusiastic before they even get in there when they see what's happening, because
mm-hmm.
it's well laid out, and it's a total surprise for everybody that goes back there. So it's very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not and hasn't been, even though this was a very big weekend, you know, it was
right, barrel
tasting.
Second of barrel tasting.
People were very, very comfortable, and you know, they really took to it, the place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we've had a very nice steady stream of people coming.
Has it been mostly locals? Has it been visitors? A mix?
A mix so far. Uh-huh. Most of the people that came in when we just opened the doors on Wednesday were, of course, local, because mm-hmm. we didn't announce it. We just wanted mm-hmm. to get the kinks out before we, you know, spread the word, as it were. Mm-hmm. But this weekend we had quite a few people from outside of the area, and they're pretty enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the, it's quite unique.
Mm-hmm. One thing we haven't said is its exact location. Ah. People might be wondering. it's not as hard to find as we may be making
right.
it.
Well, I can't tell you. It's a speakeasy. Yeah. It's a secret. It's actually on the corner of Healdsburg Avenue and North Street, which is just a block north of the yeah. square, right on the main drag.
Yeah, right there on the corner. Easy to spot.
Easy to spot. Mm-hmm. There's a large signage. It says Prohibition, and then beneath it, Speakeasy Wine Club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there, so it's quite visible.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, even though people know that it's a speakeasy bar and they're expecting it, they still, they love the concept of they'll come in and they'll kind of look around, and they're waiting for an invitation to go into the telephone booth. They uh-huh. they know it's there, but it's they're a little hesitant.
It's like,
and then you
is it okay
that,
to, that yeah. I do this?
And they get so excited, you know. It's funny because even though they know it's there, they're mm-hmm. they're very excited about going through the back wall of the telephone booth.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, it just appeals to so many things, from Superman and his mm-hmm. transformation in the phone booth to really.
Well, nobody has changed their clothes in the phone booth yet.
But not just yet. All any of those secret magical things—they're just wonderful. But now I'm curious. So you've been running the Greenleaf Inn for about 11 years.
Correct.
How did you get? How did you end up in Sonoma County, being an innkeeper and the operator of a speakeasy? Both of you, because you didn't start out doing that.
No, I started out as a lawyer in the entertainment industry, and that's where I was.
Oh, you were an entertainment lawyer.
I
didn't
was.
Realize that.
Yeah,
okay.
And also I produced some pictures. I produced Brooke Shields' first movie in 1978.
Now, which movie was that?
That's a good piece of trivia. It was called Alice, Sweet Alice.
Okay, I was going to say, it wasn't Pretty Baby.
Wasn't Pretty Baby. That was her second film.
Okay.
And then she did Blue Lagoon, but she was 9.5 years old when she did that movie.
And tell us a little bit about that.
It was actually a murder mystery, it was centered on a young gal who was going through her first Holy Communion, and she... Well, she was in the picture for all of 10 minutes, and
oh,
then
really?
She was offed by the mystery killer who was wearing a mask. And it since has become pretty much of a cult film in the
one of those cult classics.
Cult classics, uh-huh. Yeah, somewhat, yeah.
And you were the producer?
I was the producer,
okay.
Yeah.
And where was that filmed?
In New Jersey, actually.
Oh,
in,
okay.
In where I was from, excuse me. And... And from then, I became involved in the film business. I distributed independently, produced pictures,
mm-hmm.
And I produced a few other pictures. And then I practiced in entertainment law in Los Angeles for almost 30 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was doing it in New York, but it was and New Jersey as well. But it was there wasn't to be in that business. You need to,
need to be
in
Los
Angeles,
and
which
yeah.
where I was, and then. In the 90s, I was recruited to run the entertainment division of Jones Cable, Intercable, which at that time was, I think, the eighth largest cable company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in, so I went to Denver. We moved to Denver from Los Angeles to Denver. They were sold, Jones was, at the Comcast. And at that point in time, although times have changed from Comcast buying NBC, mm-hmm. But at that point in time, they were just interested in the cable side.
Right, yeah.
So they acquired Jones, and they also bought out my interest in my company that I had merged with Jones. So we were vacationing in Healdsburg. We had been coming here for a long time because we've enjoyed wines over the years, and mm-hmm. we found that Northern Sonoma was the place for us to go because it was much more comfortable than other winery areas, and it was just right for us. And we were sitting on the square one afternoon after tasting wine all day long, and saw the box that was selling the Healdsburg Tribune, which is the weekly newspaper mm-hmm. in Healdsburg, and bought it. And we were reading the paper, and there was an ad for bed and breakfast for sale. So having tasted wines all day long, it was a perfect circumstance under which to make a life-changing decision. And
one should always make them that way.
Yeah. And so four months later, we were find ourselves making breakfast for people. Not having a clue what we were doing, but we sort of muddled our way through and
did you enjoy it?
We did. We enjoyed it.
And we still
it.
Do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you first bought it, there were what, five rooms?
There were seven rooms.
Seven rooms, okay.
Originally, and then we doubled the size and of the building itself, and now there are 12 rooms and the speakeasy in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we have, and that's what we've been doing until this. And I also have a little vineyard up in Alexander Valley.
That's right. Tell us mm-hmm. about the vineyard.
We have a 10-acre vineyard that has 92-year-old Zinfandel vines, mm-hmm. which is delightful. And we learned how to harvest, how to make wine. And for the last few years, I've been making wines originally on the amateur level, but now I'm having it making wines on a more of a professional level. On a custom crush facility owned by Duzami Winery mm-hmm. In Healdsburg, and we're carrying that in the bar as well.
You are, and is it all Zinfandel?
All Zinfandel. That's all I grow, and we've just kept those vines as they have been for a long time.
Okay, that's great. We're going to take another musical break and be back with more talk with our guests. I totally forget what I was going to ask you. We were talking about cats, and I got sidetracked. cats will do that. Let's talk a little bit about the inn. We haven't talked a whole lot about it, but you started out cooking breakfast and mm-hmm. making it work. So how does it operate now? Are you the innkeepers? I bet you have staff who are cooking.
We do. We have a concierge. Uh-huh. And up until recently, I've still designed the menus.
Uh-huh.
And I was still cooking breakfast every morning. I still come around to do it and make little special things for our guests. Mm-hmm. But we're sort of known for our breakfast.
Tell us about them.
Well, sometimes we get a little unusual.
That's good. When it comes to breakfast especially, that's really good.
It is, and it's kind of fun. I mean, it's uh-huh. a little bit different than regular pancakes and eggs. For example, we do a smoked salmon panini French toast. Recently I developed a recipe for risotto, and so we do a wine and Parmesan cheese and sausage risotto with poached eggs on top.
Oh, that's my idea of breakfast.
We served that this morning. And then yesterday I made some mint lime sorbet with fresh mint from the garden.
Oh, that sounds really good.
And breakfast berry pavlova. I also developed a recipe for gorgonzola creme brulee. So a lot of times we'll do crepes with local produce, local fruits, mm-hmm. and accompany it with this gorgonzola creme brulee. And people really like that.
Yeah. Now, were you involved cooking for people, you know, professionally mm-hmm. previously?
No, I was in the fashion business, but I've always enjoyed cooking.
Okay. Tell us that you were in the fashion business.
Well, I was a fashion model for 18
years.
Oh,
you were?
In Los Angeles and New York. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I actually wrote novels. And Richard's famous last words were, when we bought the inn, that I could run the inn in my spare time and continue to write. And I haven't picked up a pen since then.
Yeah. Yeah, well, tell us about your novels. That's interesting. I didn't know that about you.
Well, they were about, I wrote two, both of them were published, and they were about the fashion industry, you know, people getting killed off.
Really?
Uh-huh. The kind you take on vacations.
Yum. You know, with the popularity of Project Runway, they sound perfect. I mean, somebody, you should do some Project Runway murder mysteries.
Yeah. There you go. Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, lots of people who don't watch any reality television watch Project runway.
I've heard. Uh-huh.
Well, I like to sew. And I didn't know that it was about sewing. And when I heard that it's about sewing? And so I started watching it. And I find that aspect of it, sewing and designing, just absolutely addictive.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
I find it really fascinating that even though it's high fashion or connected to high fashion and that sort of thing, it's still really one of the home arts.
Yes.
You know, that sewing. And I just find it really exciting that so many people are interested in. I think it has some depth when it comes to the actual what they're doing.
I agree. And yeah. It's interesting because they've taken that. When I was in high school, you had to take home ec and learn how to make
things. I did too.
Things.
I had
to
take
that anymore.
I took two semesters of sewing. And I mean, it was perfect. I was 12 years old. And you know what a good thing to do when you're an idiot. No, it's a great thing to. Your hormones are raging. But every day you spend an hour learning uh-huh. something that will last your entire life.
And it does.
Yeah. And the same thing with cooking. I had to take mm-hmm. two semesters of cooking. And I still think of my it was not called cooking then. It was called foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned not necessarily techniques, but I learned so much that has stayed with me.
It's true.
And the pleasures of the table and, mm-hmm. you know, just many things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really too bad that, especially now that they teach cooking in high school or even junior high, it's all for the point of becoming a chef.
Uh-huh.
You know, being a celebrity chef and smacking down others. You know, there's that rather uh-huh. than the... You know, this is an essential thing that yeah. every human needs to know how
well,
to do.
And it's interesting, too, because I train the staff at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, to cook and so forth. And just the little basic things, you know, how to scoop flour into a cup, how to mm-hmm. do this or that.
How to boil water.
How to boil water, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people, you know, the staff, they don't have any idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a dying art, obviously, but I mean, it's something that the everyday practical talent that people should know.
Yeah.
Just
it's not being passed on like it was.
Yeah.
I know. I wrote a column about how to boil water.
Did you
and
really?
It was yeah. And it was based on so remember this one time we went to the School for American Chefs long after I'd been cooking professionally, and there was an assistant, it was Madeline Kamen's thing over at Behringer, and they hired this assistant, and he was told, well, go in and boil some water and do blah blah blah, and he confessed, just one of the people there that he felt comfortable with, how do you tell when water's boiling? Here he had gotten a job,
mm-hmm.
this fairly specialized culinary thing, and he didn't know how to do it or what it looked like.
I'm not surprised because I had an assistant that had, when I interviewed him, he had said, oh, yeah, I worked at such and such a restaurant, and I was pastry chef or whatever it was, you know, some big title.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea. I had to teach him how to
scoop flour
and he had no clue. And I thought, well, how could you work in a restaurant and not know the basics?
Yeah.
Kay sent me to, in the beginning of the inn, she sent me to the Culinary Institute, insisted that I go there.
Uh-huh.
Well, I volunteered because I was tired of getting hit in the head with spatulas every day that I was in the kitchen.
I'm like the kitchen Nazi.
Well, it lasted for about 7 years until she fired me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm no longer allowed in the kitchen any longer.
No.
In the inn.
You know, it's not necessarily something for absolutely everybody.
I learned that.
Yeah.
The hard way.
I had a friend like that. I tried to teach him to cook. You know?
Uh-huh.
I tried to teach him, to crush garlic, because he's talking about how hard it was to uh-huh. peel garlic. It's like, well, just put the flat blade of a knife on the clove and push down with your hand. He comes and says, the garlic went flying across the room. I don't know what to do. It's like, some people just aren't meant.
Yeah.
You know, they're meant to be fed, and that's fine.
Well, Richard used
to. I'm in that category.
but he used to make pancakes for me before he had the inn. He would make pancakes every Sunday morning, and I was so thrilled that somebody else was cooking. I raved about the pancakes, and he was happy and stuff. But then he tried to serve it to the guests, and the pancakes were like something that sat in the pit of your stomach for the rest of the week. And I said, you can't be serving that to people. And he said, why? You love those pancakes. No, I love you. And people are paying money. You can't serve those pancakes.
Yes, they have different expectations.
So he went to cooking school.
Now, where did you go?
I went to the CIA, the Culinary
Over here,
Institute,
the one over here?
Over in Napa, and I took courses in baking and the basics as well, measuring. I had to scoop flour. I was sure that I had to learn how to do that properly. And I actually did cook. We learned also early on that we did not get along in the kitchen very well. So we began to alternate. And we did that for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then until she fired me.
Yeah.
Then that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm. The staff used to tattle on him too.
Yeah, well.
So girls stick together. You know,
that's right. Yeah, that's absolutely. Right.
Uh-huh. He was odd man out.
One thing I'd like to explore now is your love of Pinot Noir, because I'm kind of a Pinot geek myself. Or
I favor
been called Pinot. Other things.
Yeah. So have I. I find that it's personally that it's the most food friendly wine there is.
Mm.
It matches with so many different foods. It matches with it pairs well with seafood. It pairs mm-hmm. well with just about any meat,
mm-hmm.
any grain dish. It's just a wonderful fruit and a wonderful wine for the most part. And of course, Russian River, we're very spoiled because the Russian River appellation is, I think, the best in the country.
I agree with you.
And
maybe
perhaps,
even the best in the world.
Quite possibly. We take trips. We have taken trips to Burgundy, and I mm-hmm. love their wines, but I still always go back to the Russian River mm-hmm. Pinots. They're just head and shoulders above any other appellation that I've experienced.
Would you be willing to talk about some of your favorites, some of your favorite
sure,
producers?
Sure. William Selyem mm-hmm. is the first one that come to mind. Kistler, mm-hmm. Very, very hard to source.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Hobbs.
Mary Edwards.
Rocchioli.
Rocchioli.
There are some outstanding winemakers and some that people really haven't heard of, which we're carrying at the at Prohibition.
There's Scheer, which I think is
Scheer
really
is good.
Fabulous. Radio Coteau.
Radio Coteau is outstanding. We're carrying Halleck. People don't even know who Halleck is, and they make some wonderful Pinots. M2,
which one is that?
These are very interesting people. They donate all the proceeds of their sale of their wines to charities throughout the world, mm-hmm. and they go on charitable tours, and it's totally nonprofit.
And what's the name of it again?
EMTU.
EMTU.
And I don't know how I found them, he is a retired firefighter from San Francisco. She was a medevac person, and it's just their labor of love. And they haven't made it in a while because I think they've been overseas on some sort of a charitable tour.
Mm-hmm.
But they make some outstanding Pinots, and they're sold out very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the smaller ones that we have fun sourcing.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been some controversy. Oh, gosh, I think maybe even going back a decade, about styles.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a vintner over in Napa, and I have failed at finding out which one, who would boast that his goal was the cabernization of Pinot Noir. And we started seeing bigger and bigger over-extracted Pinots that would lose that ephemeral Pinot thing, which to me, if you love Pinot, you know exactly what I mean, just that thing in the nose that nothing compares to it. If it's there, you can't miss it. If it's not there, why drink it?
Exactly.
So how do you feel about these style differences?
Well, over-extraction is I think, a shame, mm-hmm. to be quite honest about it. One of the great producers that I discovered is George Lefkoff, who makes his Pinot is called George, after himself, and he's a small producer. He spent 5 years training under Bob Cabral at William Selyem, uh-huh. and he custom crushes in the area. He doesn't own any facility. Uh-huh. He doesn't own any vineyards, but he is he's a craftsman.
Uh-huh.
And he
what's the style like?
The style is of course it's very complex. It's deep mm-hmm. color. It's not light. I would say that it has a lot of blueberry up front,
mm-hmm.
and the finish is it's an amalgam of a number of different elements that I found very, very unique, very similar to the William Selyem style.
Okay, that says a lot. Do you know Copeland Creek?
No, I don't.
I have a surprise for you then. You need to try to get a bottle of Copeland Creek. I think I can tell you how to do that. Mm. It may be no more, or, well, it's complicated. Don Baumhefner, who, mm-hmm. if you know Don?
I know the name, I don't
okay.
know.
He, back when John Ash opened his restaurant at Montgomery Village and had the first attached retail wine shop connected to it. Don did the wine shop, mm-hmm. and he's been involved in running. He actually conducted the first ever formal wine tasting I went to, which was Pinot Noirs, going back to the 60s. He makes wine under the Copeland Creek label and has for quite a long time, but the owner of the vineyard died, mm. and so it passed on to the heirs, and they wanted to go in a different direction with the wine. God knows why, but they did. They allowed Don to buy back from them all the wine in tank that he had made and bottle it under the Copeland Creek label. And he may have, now I'm not sure, he may have acquired the name itself, so there may, but he no longer has access to that fruit. But his 2005 Copeland Creek Pinot Noir is the best Pinot Noir I've tasted in at least a decade.
Wow.
It's very light in style, mm-hmm. ethereal, ephemeral, mm. with that just intoxicating Pinot thing in the nose. It's absolutely extraordinary, and it sells retail for $27 a bottle.
That's my kind of wine.
And the last time I talked to him, which has been, oh, probably, oh, I don't know, maybe even a year, 6 or 8 months, he had about 800 cases left.
Oh,
so he may have some.
Oh,
but if you like that really beautiful, delicate style, and he has a license to sell both retail and wholesale. So
I would definitely be interested in finding him, because that's the kind of source that I really appreciate finding.
Yeah, he's really in it. He understands. I remember the first thing he said, and I was just learning about Pinot. I'd come back from France, mm-hmm. And I was really just growing into my palate, and went to this tasting, and he stood up and he said, 98% of all Pinot Noirs made should be poured down the drain. The rest are the best wines in the world.
I can't disagree.
Yeah, and I have never, in all of that, all the time, I have never experienced anything that would counter that.
Mm-hmm.
So he really is an extraordinary maker. Well, we're coming up on, we've got just enough time to play one more song, but before we do that, we will, let's go back to the original reason you're here, which is Prohibition and the Speakeasy Wine Club. You opened just 4 days ago.
Right.
It is located at 340 Healdsburg Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You have a website?
It's going up. It's a work in progress. It should be up in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
And it's www.speakeasywineclub.com.
Speakeasy Wine Club. And just in case you haven't heard, when you're putting the name of a website up in that search bar, you don't need to, if you have a newer operating system, you don't need to put in the triple W's or anything. You just put in speakeasywineclub.com. It goes, I had somebody at the Mac store tell me, if you put in those W's, it actually confuses things now.
So, good to know.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Speakeasywineclub.com. The phone number is
473-WINE.
Or 473-9463. Open 7 days a week.
7 days a week, 11 to 9.
11 to 9, perfect. And if people want information about Greenleaf Inn, you do have a really good website.
Thank
for
you
Greenleaf.
Very much.
And is that just simply Greenleaf Inn?
It's actually Grape Leaf Inn.
Oh, I knew that.
That's okay.
I'm getting you mixed up with Green Apple Inn, which...
We have green grass.
Green Apple Inn, I don't even know if it's still there. It was in Freestone many, many years ago.
Oh.
Grape Leaf Inn, of course, Grape Leaf Inn, grapeleafinn.com.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct.
And let's see, anything else we need to summarize here?
No.
Okay. Come on by and step in the phone booth.
Well, sometime I'm going to catch you, Kay, when you're sitting at the bar at Prohibition, and I'm going to get you to talk about the fashion industry and your novels. Can you tell us real quick, can you tell us the title?
One was called Satin Smile, Silken Lies, and the other one was called Skin Deep.
Skin Deep. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, and are they still in print? Can you find them?
You can find Satin Smile, Silken Lies, and it was under my...
pen name?
Yes, my pre-Rosenberg name.
Uh-huh.
McCullough.
K. McCullough.
Uh-huh.
They sound like they would be a fun read. Well, thanks so much to both of you. You're so busy. I'm amazed you were able to get away on a Sunday night.
Thank you so much.
One last thing. There's going to be a grand opening on March 28th. And I will put details about that links, and I will also put all of the addresses and stuff on Mouthful's Facebook fan page. All you need to do is become a fan. You can get all the information. We're going to have one more alcohol-related song here. Meet me back. Meet me back here next week at 7 for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. Have a great week.
Here's a story about a sinner. He used to be a winner. We enjoyed a life of prominence and position, but the pressures of the office and his social ad engagements and his selfish wife.